Today with us, we have Bislaski. It's an honor. Actually, we met in Paris. Jason Barnard invited us, and it was really great to meet you over there. And there were many interesting things that you discussed at the event, and probably we're going to start from some of those topics. And, you know, there is no need for presentation because I guess in the SEO community, everyone knows Bill, and you've been doing this for how many years? When did you start with SEO?
I started doing SEO in 1996.
Wow. So it was a long time ago. And now there are many, many changes, I guess, in the SEO.
I made my first site in 1996, I think.
I made my first site in 1996, too. And the brother of one of the people I worked on that site with sent us an email saying, hey, she was selling computers for a digital equipment corp at that time. She sent an email saying, hey, we just started this new website. You guys might like it. It was altavista.digital.com, which was my first chance to see a search engine in action. So and we said, we need to be in this. And so I tried to figure out how, and that was my first attempt at doing SEO.
Nice. SEO for Alta Vista. Yes. So where do we want to start? I guess, you know, in the last days, there was a lot of discussion around the Google discovery. And
I have, this is Andrea Volpini presenting myself, but Bill, really, I was in the conference in Brighton. I was really shocked to see how much this industry has changed since 1996. And I wanted to get a head start with this webinar on how you see this queryless world that Google Discover introduced.
It has changed, but it hasn't changed that much. I remember in 2007 giving a presentation at an SEO meetup on named entities. So things have been in the atmosphere. We just haven't really brought them to the forefront and talked about them too much. Queryless searches, yeah. I mean, you're driving down the road 50 miles an hour. You wave your phone around in the air, and it's sort of a signal to your phone asking you where you're going. Give me navigation. What's ahead of us? What's the traffic like? Are there detours? And your phone can tell you that. It can say there's a 5-minute delay up ahead. You really don't need a query for that.
So that you, what do you need then? I mean, if you don't need a query, what do you need?
Well, for the Google Now, for it to show you search suggestions, it needs to have some idea of what your search history is like, what you're interested in. And you can, in Google Now, you can feed it information about your interests, but it can also look at what you've searched for in the past, what you look like you have an interest in. If you want to see certain information about a certain sports team or a movie or a TV series, you search for those things and it knows you have an interest in them.
So it's a context. It's a context that gets built around the user. But you see the data behind us. Right. It's data from the Google Search Console of one of our clients. And I found it extremely interesting to the extent that I could see that the traffic from Discover reached 42%. And you can see actually, you know, this big bump is due to the fact that Google started to account this data. Now, when I tell to the people in Brighton SEO that 42% of the organic traffic is coming in a queryless way, I could see that a lot of the people in the industry kind of had some level of fear, saying, okay, how do we control this?
You know, can we optimize for it?
And they should be happy about it. They should be excited about it.
I was super excited. I mean, when I saw it, for me, it was like, you know, a revelation, because I always have put a lot of effort in creating data and metadata before, you know, we arrived to structured data. It's always been a very important aspect of, you know, the website that we build. I mean, I used to build a CMS, so I was really into, you know, creating data. but I underestimated myself the impact of a content recommendation tool like Google Discover when it comes to traffic of a news website like the one that we see here.
Right.
So did you expect something like this?
If you see, watch how Google is tracking trends, entity search, and you can identify which things are entities by them having an entity type associated with them, something other than just search term. So you search for like a baseball team or a football team, and you see search term is one category associated with it, and the other category might be professional Chicago baseball team. And the professional Chicago baseball team is the entity. Google's tracking entities. What this means is when they identify interests that you may have, they may do that somewhat broadly, and they may show you as a searcher in Google Now in Discovery things related to that. So if you write about some things with some level of generalization that might fit some of those broader categories that matches a lot, you're going to show up in some of those discovery things. It's like when Google used to show headers in search results, search news now or top news now, and identify your site as, or something you wrote as a blog post as something fits a top news now category. You didn't apply to have that. It's something you were a beneficiary of Google's recommendation.
Right.
Yes.
So I when I saw this, I started to look a little bit at the data in the Google Search Console of this client and then another client and then another client again. And what I found out by comparing, you know, these first sites is that Google is tending not to make an overlap with Google Search and Discover, meaning that if it's bringing traffic on Google Search, you know, the page might not be featured on Discover. The pages that are featured on Discover that are also on Google Search have high ranking. But I found extremely interesting the fact that pages that didn't receive any organic traffic have been discovered by Google Discover, as if Google is trying to differentiate these channels.
Actually, there was an interesting point that you raised also at the event about like the two-level search. It's probably something that which is related to this point as well.
I think they're trying to broaden what we might see, broaden our experience, give us things that we're not necessarily searching for, but are related. There's at least one AI program I've worked with where it looks at my Twitter stream and recommends stories for me based upon what I've been tweeting. And I see Google sort of taking a role like that. These are some other things they might be interested in that they haven't been searching for. Let me show them to them. So having the idea of Google as a, there's a brilliant Google contributor video from Andrew Haig called The Semantic Search Engine. In the first few minutes, he starts off saying, okay, I had trouble deciding what to name this video. I thought about a Discover search engine. And then realized, okay, then I thought about a decision search engine and realized Bing had already taken that. A smart search engine, well, that's sort of obvious. Capturing what we're interested in is something Google seem to try to do more of with the related questions that people also ask. We're seeing Google trying to keep us on search results pages, clicking through question after question, seeing things that are related that we're interested in. Probably tracking every click that we make as to what we might have some interest in. With one box results, same type of thing. They'll keep on showing us one box results if we keep on clicking on them. If we stop clicking on them, they'll change those.
So where are we going with all of these? I mean, how do you see the role of SEO is changing? I mean, what would you recommend to an SEO that starts today? What should it become? I mean, you told us how you started in 96 with someone asking you, you know, to be on Alta Vista. And I remember Alta Vista quite well. I also worked with Alta Vista myself, and we started to use Alta Vista for intranets. But what would you recommend to someone that starts SEO today?
Okay, I'm going to go back to 2005. To a project I worked on then. It was for Baltimore.org. It was a visitors center of Baltimore, the conference center. They wanted people to visit the city and see it and see everything they had to offer. So they were trying to rank well for terms like Baltimore bars and Baltimore sports. So they decided, they got in their heads that they wanted to rank well for Baltimore Black history. So we tried to optimize the page for Baltimore Black History. We put the words Baltimore Black History on the page a few times. And there were too many other good sites that were talking about Baltimore's Black History. We were failing miserably to rank well for that phrase. So I turned to copywriter and I said, there are great places in Baltimore to see that have something to do with this history. Let's write about those. Let's create a walking tour of the city. Let's show people the famous Black churches and Black colleges and the 9-foot-tall statue of Billie Holiday, the 6 townhomes that Frederick Douglass bought in his 60s. He was an escaped slave at one point in time, came back to Baltimore as he got older and a lot richer, and started buying properties and became a businessman. Let's show people those places. Let's tell them how to get there. So we created a page that was a walking tour of Baltimore. It after 3 months, it was the 6th most visited page in that site. A site of about 300 pages or so. So that was really good. That was successful. It got people to actually visit the city of Baltimore. They wanted to see those things. Aaron Bradley ran this series of tweets the other day where one of the things he said was, don't get worried about a switch in search engines to entities. Entities are all around us. They surround us. They're everywhere. They're everything you can write about. They're web pages. They're people. They're places. And, you know, it's true. If we switch from a search based on words, on matching words on documents to words and queries, we're missing the opportunity to write about things, to identify attributes, properties associated with those things, to tell people about what's in the world around us. And they're going to search for those things. That's the movement that search engines are making, being able to understand that you're talking about something in particular and return information about that thing.
So the new SEO should become basically a contextual writer, someone that intercepts the intents and can create good content around it. Or is there something else in the profession of SEO in 2020, let's say?
One thing I wrote about recently was something called entity extraction. And a search engine being able to read a page, identify all the things that are on that page that are being written about, and all the contexts that surround those things, all the classes, the example in the post I wrote about was a baseball player, Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper was a Washington National. He's now a Philadelphia Philly. Bryce Harper hits home runs. That's the context. He's hit so many home runs over his career. Having a search engine being able to take facts on a page, understand them, and make a collection of those facts, compare them to what's said on other pages about the same entities.
Right.
So that it can fact check. It can do the fact checking itself. It doesn't need some news organization to do that.
Of course. Well, this is the reason when we started our project, my initial idea was to create a semantic editor to let people create linked data. Right. And then I didn't look at SEO as a potential market, but then I realized that immediately all the interest was coming from indeed the SEO community. So here in the background, I have triples that WordLift creates for you out of the page that we have about you on the WordLift website. And this means that when we annotate the content with our tool, we have this permanent linked data ID. And in the beginning, I thought it was natural to have permanent linked data IDs because this was the way that the semantic web worked. But then I suddenly realized there is a very strong SEO effect in doing that because Google is also crawling this RDF that I'm publishing. And I saw a few months back that is actually a different class of IP that Google uses for crawling this data. So do you think that it still it makes sense to publish your own linked data ID or it's okay to use other IDs? I mean, do you see a value in publishing data with your own systems?
Something I haven't really thought about too much, but it's worth considering. You know, the friend of a friend IDs and so on. I've seen people publishing those. I've tried to put one of those together, and I sort of asked myself, why am I doing this? Is that there? Yeah. Is there going to be value to it? Is it going to be worthwhile? But you know, when I put Jason LD together for my homepage. About me, I wanted to try to see what it was capable of, to see what it might, what might show in search engines for doing that. And some of it showed, some of it didn't. It was sort of interesting to experiment with and try and see what the rest of the world is catching on to when you do create that stuff.
But one interesting aspect, I think, when you use overlinked data is also that, for instance, the way we use the same as to give like more references, and also the way we use like the website property is that we give as much data as possible to the search engine, so we make it easy for Google to fact check our information.
But this is actually how the entity of Gennaro was born in the knowledge graph. Because we started to add a lot of reference and telling Google, okay, here is Gennaro, who is also authors of these books. And as soon as we injected this information into our knowledge graph and into the pages, for Google was easier to collect the data and fact check and say, okay, so this is the guy that wrote the book that now works for this company. And
he provided, as a result, he provided like the knowledge graph with a complete description. And so it was something that before it was not showing up in the search, or at least it was just partial information. So it felt like, you know, by providing this kind of information, we allowed the search engine to actually Google to have a better context and fact check the information, which gave it, you know, kind of authority to the information that I provided. So
have you looked at Microsoft's concept graph?
It's even more advanced. I found it more advanced in a way, and it's also very quicker in getting the information in. So we have a lot of more easy experience when we have someone that wants to be on Bing, because as soon as we put structured data, Google Bing's gets it into the panel.
It surprised me because for a while, stuff that Microsoft Research Asia was doing was sort of disappearing. So they put together ProBase and it sort of stopped. Nothing happened for a couple of years. And it's sort of been revived into the Microsoft Concept Graph, which is good to see. It's good to see they did something with all that work.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Plus, we don't know how much integration there is also between Bing and the LinkedIn sort of API.
It's pretty strong right now. It's pretty strong. I noticed that also the quickest entry in the Satori, the knowledge graph of Microsoft, is now for a person to go through LinkedIn, because it is as like they're using this information.
Interesting. So what other ways can we use structured data currently for SEO? Because like when we met at the SEO camp in Paris, you explained all the current current scenario of how Google has changed from the structured data standpoint. What have you been noticing so far in the last period?
So one of the things I'm excited about is augmentation queries. And I mentioned those in the presentation. Google will not only look at queries associated with pages about a particular person, place, or thing, it will look at the query log information, and it'll look at structured data associated with the page, and it will run queries based upon those. It's sort of doing some machine learning to try to understand what else might be interesting about pages of yours. And if these augmentation queries, the test queries that it runs about your page, tend to do as well as the original queries for your page in terms of people selecting things, people clicking on things, it might combine the augmentation query results with the original query results when it shows people them for your page. So if you want the new schemas from the latest version of schema 3.1, is a knows about attribute. And I mentioned with the knows about attribute, you could be a plumber, you could know about drain repair. And so someone searches for Los Angeles plumbers and they expect to see information just about Los Angeles plumbers, they may see a result from a Los Angeles plumber that talks about drain repair. And that may be exactly what they're looking for. That may expand search results, expand something relevant to your site that you've identified as a level, an area of an expertise, which I think is interesting. I like that structured data is capable of a result like that.
What is your favorite new addition to Schema 3.5?
FAQ page.
All right. Yeah, nice. That's very practical and useful. Absolutely. Because my favorite is Distillery, but this for other reasons.
there's such a wide range. They're going to update that every month now, but just having things like bed type.
Yeah.
is good. Hotels and yeah.
What do you think is the right balance when I add structured data to my pages between an over complicated data structuring and simplicity? Because there's always like a balance that you have to strike between being too detailed in your data and still don't invest too much of your time on it.
Did SEO for a site a few years ago that was a apartment complex. It was having trouble selling units, renting units. It was a four-page apartment complex, and it showed off its dog park really well. It didn't show off things like the fact that if you took the elevator to the basement, you got let out to the DC Metro, where you could travel all throughout Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, and Southern Maryland, and visit all 31 Smithsonians and a lot of other things that are underground underneath that part of Virginia. It was like right next to what's called Pentagon City, which is the largest shopping mall in Virginia. It's four stories tall, all underground. You can't see it from the street. But adding structured data to your page to identify those is something you can do. It's probably something you should include on the page itself. So maybe you want to include information, more information on your pages about entities, and include them in structured data too, in a way that is really precise. You're using the language identified in schema that subject matter experts describe as something people might want to know. It defines it well, it defines it easily.
So what you're saying is do what you do with your content with your data. So if you put emphasis on an aspect content-wise, then you should also do the proper markup for it.
Right. With the apartment complex, I was talking about location cells.
Yep.
It's a type of thing that gets people to decide, this is where I want to live. Tell them about the area around them.
Right.
Put that in on your page and put that in your data. Don't show pictures of a dog park if you want to tell them what the area schools are like and what the community is like, what businesses are around, what opportunities there are. You can go to the basement of its apartment complex and ride to the local baseball stadium or the local football stadium. You know, you're blocks away. You don't have to. DC traffic is a nightmare. It's tough to commute through. If you ride the metro line everywhere,
That's big. Also, I mean, metro in real estate, we say it's always like increase the 30% the value of the real estate if you have, you know, a metro station, close by. So definitely is relevant. So something that is relevant for the business should be put into consideration also when structuring the page.
But my question is it worth also exploring a schema which are not yet officially used, let's say, by Google? I mean, is it worth doing that kind of effort?
You can anticipate things that never happen. That's possible, but sometimes maybe anticipating things correctly can be a competitive advantage. If it comes into fruition, that it's come about. You mentioned real estate, and have you seen things like walkability scores being used on realty sites? Okay, so the idea that somebody can give you a metric to tell you where you can compare easily one location to another based on what you can do without a car, that's a nice feature. Being able to find out data about a location could be really useful if
you have
a lot of competition.
This is why, getting back to the LinkedIn ID, this is why having a LinkedIn ID for the articles and the entities that describe the article become relevant, because then you can query the data yourself, and then you can make an analysis of, you know, what neighborhood have, you know, the least amount of traffic, and see, okay, did I written about this neighborhood or not? So this is also one of the experiments that we do these days, is that we bring the entity data from the page into Google Analytics to help the editorial team think about, you know, what traffic entities are generating across multiple pages. So entities, in a way, can be also used internally for organizing things and for saying, yes, in this neighborhood, for instance, we have a least amount of criminality and we've written very few articles, or, you know, things like that. I mean, you can start cross-checking data, not only waiting for Google to use the data. You can also use the data yourself.
Are you familiar with Mike Blumenthal? He writes about local search.
Okay.
He just wrote an article based upon something I wrote about the thing about entity extraction. He said hotels are entities. And if you put information about hotels, about bookings, about locations, about amenities,
yep,
onto your pages so that people can find them, so people can identify those things, you're making their experience searching for things richer and
more. Well, we have a case where we have done especially these for a lodging business, and we have saw that as soon as we have started to add amenities as structured data, and the most importantly, as soon as we started to actually add geographical references to the places that this location were in, we saw an increase not in pure traffic terms. I mean, the traffic went up, but we also saw an interesting phenomenon of queries becoming more broad. So the site, before adding structured data to the hotels and to the lodging business, received traffic from very few keywords. As soon as we started to add structured data and, you know, tagging amenities and services, we also added the schema action for booking. We saw that Google was bringing a lot more traffic on long tail keywords for a lot of different location that this business had hotels in, but it was not being visible on Google.
So it wasn't just a matter of matching names of locations on your pages to names of locations and queries. It was Google understanding where you were located.
Yeah, because
what else was near. Yeah.
We added the same as a reference to DVpedia, but also to channel names to let Google understand that we were talking about this specific location, and we had a lodging business there that could provide Wi-Fi and that could provide support for pets and so on and so forth. And we saw not only an increase in traffic, but the traffic becoming different.
Yeah, brother. So it's almost like structured data creates demand for your own sort of content.
It gets more qualified visitors. We started also on this site to experiment on schema action. What do you think schema action are usable for?
There was a patent that came out a couple of years ago where Google said you can circle an entity on a mobile device, and you can register actions associated with those entities. Somebody got the idea right and the concept wrong. They were thinking about touch screens instead of voice. They never really rewrote that so that it was voice enabled, voice activated. So you could register actions with spoken queries instead of these touch queries. But I like the idea. I like Alexa has the programs. Being able to register actions with your entities is not too different from what existed at Google before. Think about how you would optimize a local search page where you would make sure your address was in a postal format so that it was more likely to be found and used. Of course, you wanted people to drive to that location. You wanted to give them driving directions, and that's something you could register an action for now, but it's already in there. It sort of feels like you're helping Google implement things that it should be implementing anyway.
Yeah.
Or you would like it to be.
Of course. I think that's a very beautiful point. You know, that we're doing something that we should do. We are now doing it for Google, but that's the way it should be done. I like it a lot.
My one curiosity that I have, like, as we move into where the voice search, right? And, there are already some steps that Google is taking to bring voice search by using a structured data, like despicable items and stuff like that. How much you think, like, structured data is going to help for voice search? And if Google actually is going to, it might say, I'm not going to use structured data. I mean, what's your idea on that? How much structured data is going to affect voice search?
I can see schema not being necessary because of other things going on, like the entity extraction, where Google is trying to identify. But Google tends to do things in a redundant way. They tend to like have two different channels to get the same thing done. And so if one gets something correct and the other doesn't, it fails to, they still have it covered. I think Schema gives them that chance. It gives site owners a chance to include things that maybe Google might have missed. And if Google captures stuff site owner misses, and they have an organization like Schema behind them, which isn't the search engine, it's a bunch of volunteers who are subject matter experts in a lot of cases, or play those on TV. Some are really good at that. Some of them miss some things. And if you are a member of the Schema community mailing list, see some of the conversations that take place where people sort of call people on things. It's like, wouldn't you do this for this? Wouldn't you do that? Why aren't you doing this? And it's interesting to read those conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I always enjoy, I mean, the mailing list of Schema, because as you said, I mean, you have different perspective and different subject matter experts that, of course, are in the need of declaring, you know, what their content is about. I think that Schema, I see it as a sitemap for data in a way. So even though Google can crawl the information, you know, it always values the fact that, you know, there is someone behind that it's curating the data and that might add something that might have missed, as you said, but also it gives them a chance to counter check, you know, and say, okay, is this true or not? I mean,
you want a scalable web. The reason why we no longer have a DMOZ is because it didn't make sense to have editors curating what gets listed.
Yep.
And that potentially is a issue with Wikipedia at some point in the future. There's only so much a human edited knowledge base can handle. When some event changes the world overnight and some facts about some important things change, you don't want human editors trying to catch up as quickly as they can and get it correct. You want some automated way of having that information updated. Will we see that? We have organizations like DeepMind mining sites like the Daily Mail and CNN. They chose those not necessarily because they're the best sources of news, but because they're structured in a way that makes it easy to
information. Of course. Well, it was beautiful. I think it was beautiful, intense. I think all of our audience will really enjoy the talk. We owe you a pizza in Rome, so this is an official invite from our team to come to Rome and have a pizza together.
And a nice walk, yes. So I guess we're closing this up. And, you know, if you have a last suggestion of what, like, people like SEO should be looking at right now very, very carefully, what would that be?
It would be not to be intimidated by the search engine grabbing content from web pages and publishing it in knowledge panels. It's look for the opportunities when they're there. Google is business, and as business, they base part of what they do on advertising, but they're not trying to steal your business. They may take advantage of business models that maybe need to be a little more sophisticated than how tall is Abraham Lincoln? You know, you could probably build something a little bit more robust than that as a business model. But if Google's stealing your business model from you in what they publish on knowledge panels, you should work on the business model and not be intimidated by it. And consider how much of an opportunity it is potentially to have a channel where you're being focused upon, located easily by people who might value your services.
Yeah, interesting.
It's a message of trust towards the machine, which
no,
I
especially,
like.
It's very important because still Google is very important distribution channel, and we know it, and we need to understand how it's evolving just so that we can keep bringing people on our to our businesses. So that's an opportunity. So yeah. It was, I guess, it was great.
A great closure. Great message, Bill. Great message.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.